This is
Stan Z Perspectives.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the 10th episode of Stan Z Perspectives, a podcast hosted by the Young Scientist Journal, an international peer-reviewed science journal written, reviewed, and produced by students aged 12 to 20. My name is Emma, and I'll be one of your hosts for today's episode. My main interests are biochemistry, physics, and medicine, but I'm always trying to explore new fields as well.
And Khushi, your second host for today. My interests are computer science, artificial intelligence, and chemistry. We are very excited for today's episode because we are joined by a guest speaker.
That's right. For today's episode, we'll be discussing planetary science with our guest, Riley Lewis, a graduate student in astronomy and astrophysics at UCLA.
Riley, thank you for joining us. Before we jump into the episode, would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah. So my name is Briley Lewis. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a fifth year PhD candidate at UCLA. So I'm in the Department of Physics and Astronomy, and I in particular do astronomy about exoplanets, so planets around other stars, and about planets in our own solar system, basically trying to get at the whole picture of planets, how they form, what they're like now, and maybe how we can find life. I, in particular, work on a method called direct imaging, where we're actually trying to take pictures of planets, as opposed to other methods, like what the Kepler Space Telescope did, that are looking at a star and then looking for signs of planets indirectly.
Sounds interesting. How did you discover your interest in the study of exoplanets and solar system science in general?
Yeah, so the reason that I got into astronomy at all is that I liked sci-fi as a kid, and was always kind of interested in the idea of, you know, other worlds and how we can explore them. So I started majoring in astronomy in college and noticed that planets were still the thing I was interested in. So the first research opportunity I applied to, I ended up working on a project about how to directly image exoplanets. And that sort of was a great jumping off point to keep exploring that interest.
You've completed a lot of research projects, including at the American Museum of Natural History and the Space Telescope Science Institute. What has been the most interesting project for you, and what significance does it have to the real world?
Yeah, so every project I've worked on has, you know, been sort of special to me in some way. I think that's how it goes with research, is when you spend that much time delving into a question really deeply, then you end up forming sort of a connection to it, and they all have sort of different special places in your life. Like picking a favorite project to me kind of feels like the idea of picking a favorite child. So one that I think is particularly cool just because it used data from a space mission is the work I did at Space Telescope Science Institute. So everyone calls it STSCI, which is sort of shorter, but not really. So at STSCI, I worked on data from the New Horizons mission, which did a flyby of Pluto, the dwarf planet. And so using data from this little spacecraft that traveled all the way, traveled 10 years to the outer solar system to take these pictures of Pluto, got to use data from that. And pretty much I was looking at how the seasons change on Pluto and what sort of the overall distribution of the ice on Pluto was at the time we saw it at New Horizons flyby. And I think that was particularly cool because of the fact that, you know, it's using this incredible machine that people built. In terms of real world applicability, that's a question I always kind of struggle with in my work, because I'm looking at planets that are nothing like Earth, that are not things that we could travel to or live on. So for me, I think the sort of big real world takeaway from the work that I do, which is looking at all sorts of other planets that are nothing like our own, is sort of realizing how special and valuable Earth is, and that, you know, the saying, there is no planet B. So it's really fun and cool to look at all these other worlds and understand our place in the universe better. But admittedly, it's not like I'm, you know, making technology that cures diseases. It's not like that directly applicable, you know what I mean?
Yeah, makes sense.
That sounds like a very fascinating topic to research and learn about. Is there something you are currently working on? And if so, how has the pandemic impacted your work?
Yeah, I'm working on multiple different projects right now. That's what grad school is pretty much, is working on a bunch of different research things. I am pretty lucky in that the pandemic didn't impact my work too much. A couple of projects that I'm tangentially involved in got delayed a little bit because, you know, there was a time where people weren't actually being able to like go access telescopes physically. And then I think the sort of biggest hit from the pandemic was, you know, the fact that I personally, you know, especially in the beginning days of the pandemic when everyone was very stressed and didn't know what was going on, you know, just like wasn't as productive, which I think is a very reasonable human response to what was going on in the world. And then I think the thing that a lot of, you know, grad students and undergrads trying to get into research alike have gone through during the pandemic is the fact that we haven't been able to meet as many other people in the field, which is a really big thing. Like the way that you, you know, get ideas, share your work, kind of get to know everyone else that works in science so that you can collaborate with them is mostly by in-person sort of conferences and networking. And people didn't really get to do that over the last few years, even within our own department. So there's sort of a lack of community that was, I think, really hard for a lot of people involved in research over the last few years.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate. It looks like you have quite a few publications. Do you have any suggestions for students who are aiming to conduct research in the future and are looking to publish their work in an academic journal?
Yeah, so I know that the thing is, publication is like this thing where it's like, oh, this is like the big metric we judge people by, is like if you've gotten a published paper. But I wish it wasn't that way. And I would encourage people to focus on, you know, making sure that they are learning things and getting experience and the skills they want. And if a publication comes out of it, then great. The things that I did in undergrad, most of them actually didn't lead to publications. Really just because the people working on it didn't have time to finish it, to be honest. Like a lot of my collaborators moved on to other jobs and things like that. So there are sometimes things that get in the way of publishing that are not your fault or within your control. But that doesn't mean that experience wasn't valuable. I learned so much from it, and it's kind of what got my career started. So I would say focus on learning the skills you need and looking at the questions that you're interested in. That being said, I acknowledge that in the real world, publication is a thing you need. So if you have a mentor you're working with, and that's something that you are thinking about, that you're like, this seems to be a thing I need for my career, talk with them directly about it and be like, hey, is this something that you think I really need to continue on in my career at this stage? Like, how can I get involved with something that is going to lead to a publication so I can have that? And like really directly talking with whoever you're working with research-wise and being clear like, hey, I know this is a thing that is going to be helpful in my career right now. Is there a way I can be involved, maybe as a co-author? Or if you feel ready, you could say like, hey, is there something I can maybe take lead on? And just, yeah, finding ways to get involved in that process so you can see how it works.
Very thorough. Thank you. What are your future career goals and how do you want to progress as a researcher?
Yeah, so I would like to be a professor at a four-year university somewhere, but not necessarily one that is, you know, a big, giant, like, research-focused university like UCLA is. So in addition to actually doing science research, I also do a little bit of education research and a lot of interdisciplinary science writing instruction. So ideally for me in the future, I would love to end up somewhere that I can both keep doing my science research and really focus on teaching and teaching undergrads these really critical science writing skills and teaching introductory science classes, because that's something I love doing, is teaching science for non-science majors. So that would be, you know, a smaller four-year like liberal arts college or something like that. That's sort of the dream. I think there was a second half of that question. What was the second half?
How do you want to progress as a researcher?
Well, I guess I did kind of answer that. I don't know. I want to keep doing the science I'm interested in. like it, if I can keep doing the kind of work that I'm interested in, it's a good career. That's really the way I see it.
Yeah. Would you continue doing research even if you became like a professor at a liberal arts college?
Yeah. So that's why I sort of would want to go the professor at a college route versus say a community college teacher, because there's different sort of academic positions that have different distributions of how much time you spend teaching and how much time you spend researching. So, you know, some people want to find a job that's 100% research. Some people want to find a job that's 100% teaching. I land somewhere in the middle where I want to keep doing both. And so professors at most colleges, most four-year colleges still do research in some kind.
How is being a current PhD candidate different from being an undergraduate student at Columbia or even a graduate student at UCLA?
Yeah, so the difference between a PhD candidate and just like a general grad student means that I have proposed my thesis and my committee said, okay. So you get the PhD candidate title when you do this thing called advancement to candidacy, which is where you say, hey, here's what I want to do for my thesis. Your committee asks you a bunch of questions and then they're like, okay, like, you know, we'll give a stamp to that. Go ahead, go forth and do your work. So that's the difference between a PhD candidate and sort of what comes before, where you're doing more classes and learning and really preparing to be able to propose that thesis. Grad school is super different from undergrad in that it's much more like it is a job than being a student. So as a grad student, you get paid, your tuition is paid for, and you teach and do research for the university. So it's sort of like this hands-on job training in a way. Whereas, you know, being an undergrad, you are really still focused on taking classes and maybe doing a little bit of research when you can get involved in it. So super different. You also have a lot more independence as a grad student. Like doing research as an undergrad, you know, you're just getting started. So there's a lot more sort of, I don't know, you're still learning the ropes. So it's not like you can just be like, oh yeah, I'm going to start a new project and I'm going to go do it off on my own, which is much more what being a grad student is like, where you say, hey, I have this idea. And your advisor is like, neat, let me know how I can help. And then you kind of go off and do your thing.
Yeah, thanks. Astrophysics is a very challenging field and one that significantly lacks female representation. What would you say to girls and women who are interested in these topics but might be afraid of pursuing them?
First off, there's in astronomy, there's really not much to be afraid of. Our field is really trying to do its best to be more progressive, welcoming, and inclusive, and equitable, importantly. Is it perfect? No. Is it better than it used to be and better than some other STEM disciplines? Yes. There are so many initiatives in the field right now that are trying to make everything more inclusive, not only along the lines of gender diversity, but also along the lines of other intersectional facets of diversity, like race and socioeconomic status. So it's a thing that the field is really actively working on and really trying. And at least as a white woman, I have actually never really felt excluded from astronomy spaces. From physics spaces, sometimes they're a little bit harder. I also recognize the limits of my experience and that I am white, which is significant privilege. But the field is definitely becoming more and more diverse. And as long as you find the people who will support you and treat you right, which there are those people out there, I think it can be a really nourishing environment. Yeah, that's not to say there's not terrible things that happen still. I've been pretty lucky, but yeah, it really is getting better. And I would say don't let it stop you. But at the same time, don't let people treat you in ways that you don't want to be treated. Yeah, it's a complicated thing. I don't know how to answer that in a really short sentence. It's a could be a whole other hour of discussion.
Yeah, those initiatives are very valuable. Outside of research, you also have a lot of experiences in science communication, writing articles for Scientific American, SPIE, and Astrobytes, just to name a few. I know that a lot of students, including myself, are looking for more ways to participate in science writing. So how did you find these opportunities and what do you enjoy most about them?
Yeah, so I always loved writing. In college, I almost quit my astrophysics major and changed to creative writing because I've loved writing my whole life. And I took a science writing class in college that really made me feel like, oh, kind of doing both these things is a possibility. And then in grad school, I found Astrobytes, which is this really awesome collaboration of grad students who write about current research and publish a post every single day, which is amazing. And Astrobytes was sort of the springboard for getting more involved in writing. And then I took another writing class here at UCLA, and the instructor of that was awesome and really encouraged me to continue pursuing that. So I talked to the people in my university who focused on writing and science writing and learned all I could from them about science journalism, how you pitch an article, all sorts of stuff like that. I joined the National Association of Science Writers, which is a professional organization for people who do science writing and journalism. And that helped me learn so much more about what the field of science writing is like. And then I started pitching different places and trying to write for other outlets. And it takes a lot of trying and failing, but eventually you get one and then it sticks and then you can, it kind of snowballs. And now I've been writing as a science journalist for a couple of years now. I teach a class on science journalism at UCLA. And it's really fun. It's a very valuable part of what I do, in my opinion, because what's the fun of science if people are scared of it and they don't get to understand the cool things going on? And it's also just critical to like the functioning of society that people can approach science and not, you know, feel threatened or afraid of it. It's something that should be cool for everyone and accessible for everyone. So yeah, how I got started is sort of a series of happy events. But to anyone who's interested and wants to get started, I would say see if maybe your university you're at or that you're going to soon, if you aren't in college yet, has science writing classes. Look for opportunities to write. Like I know there are a lot of essay contests for high schoolers. And there's a publication called Frontiers for Young Minds that involves high school students and even younger students as reviewers, which is really cool. And then in college, then you have more of an opportunity to like, you know, get into student publications because universities usually have a lot of student publications and things like that.
But yeah, I couldn't agree more. Science and writing, they're not two individual fields. And it seems like you are deeply involved in teaching as well, such as developing and teaching a new course called Hands-On Exoplanet Astronomy as part of UCLA's Collegium of University Teaching Fellows. So what is the most rewarding part of teaching for you?
Oh, God, I love, yeah, that's a hard question because there's some really, really valuable parts. So first, I'm going to explain a little bit about what CUTF is since you mentioned it. So that's actually a class I haven't taught yet. I'm currently developing it this summer and it's going to be taught next year in spring. It's a course that's meant to fulfill the general education requirements for, you know, non-science students. And I'm designing it so that it also fulfills students' writing requirement. So it's going to be the first science writing class in my department that actually fulfills sort of undergrad's requirements they need to graduate. And I think that's going to be really neat. It's building off of work I've done in a seminar I taught the last 2 years that I also designed called Astrobiology and Science Journalism that taught non-science majors how to actually write about science. So I find that one of the most rewarding parts of teaching isn't like, oh, my students know more about space now. It's sort of changing the way that they look at the world and making it so that they actually feel more empowered to engage with science and also to explain their ideas and themselves. That's part of why teaching writing is such an incredible experience, because it gives people tools to be agents of change in the world and to express their ideas and to engage critically with discussions and debates that are going on in society. So teaching science writing is, you know, getting all those really incredible transformative aspects of writing and in helping people sort of get over the fear of science or feel more like they can be a part of science in some way in their lives. So yeah, I just love working with students and seeing how I can help them grow and help them feel more independent and sort of like they have agency in the world.
adding on to that point, what's your favorite course you have taught?
Oh, it's definitely the seminar I designed. There's nothing like designing your own course from scratch, especially about something that's like a topic of your choosing instead of like a, you know, basic general astro class. So it's definitely that one. Yeah.
That sounds really nice. Juggling research, science writing, and teaching is already very impressive, but you also make time for community outreach, for example, volunteering with Astronomy Live, which brings science demonstrations, including a mobile planetarium, to underserved schools in the Los Angeles area. Why are these kinds of activities so important to you?
It's kind of the same reason that teaching writing is important. It's because as scientists, we have a responsibility to make sure that we are engaging the public. Like, my salary is paid by taxpayers because I'm paid by the National Science Foundation. So it's, in a way, just kind of fundamentally wrong if we are keeping this in some sort of a little elitist bubble. So the things that we do need to be accessible. And since we are the ones with this expert knowledge, it falls on us to be able to, you know, teach it and share it and make sure that that sort of joy of discovery is open to anyone, especially because, you know, if we're worried about diversity and inclusion at the university level, that starts much earlier before students even make it into a university. So if we want to fix the problems in our own field of like, hey, why are there only, you know, there's, I think, less than 50 Black woman astronomers with PhDs in the US. I can't remember the exact number, but it's small. So if we're like, hey, that's a problem, we can't just be like, why is no one coming here? Like, there are a lot of societal factors that go into that, and we need to address the root causes of why Black women aren't, you know, necessarily coming into our field, or why we're losing them because they don't feel welcome here. So addressing issues of DEI doesn't just start at the university, it starts much earlier. And in activism that maybe doesn't seem related to science, it's not just about outreach to schools, it's about making sure that we vote in ways that, you know, increase equity in education earlier and increase equity in, you know, how parents of different races and socioeconomic statuses are treated and things like that. So outreach is sort of one component of a much bigger sort of idea in my life of how I would like to see the world become a more equitable place. And it's one thing that I can do as a scientist is to share my knowledge to the kids, you know?
Yeah.
Given all these commitments, how do you maintain a successful work-life balance?
The honest answer is sometimes I don't. Recently, I've been a little bad about that. Like it's hard. It's a lot of things to do. And I think, I'm not perfect. I try my best to make sure that I at least get enough sleep. I try to make sure that I move my body in some way most days so that I at least don't feel terrible. I try to make time to hang out with my friends and do things that, you know, feel nourishing to me. I don't always succeed in that. I've been overworking a little bit lately. But all we could do is try our best. And I'm trying to learn how to say no more. It's really hard when everything is really interesting and you want to do it all. But I'm trying to learn how to say no more and prioritize taking care of myself. And weirdly enough, one of the best things for my self-care that I've done is I got a dog at the beginning of the pandemic, and he's my pride and joy. And he's such a sweet baby. And taking care of him reminds me that I have to take care of myself. And I just want to spend time with him and hang out with him. And that's always so calming and nice. So having him has actually been really good for work-life balance.
That's so sweet. Last question. What advice do you have for young scientists aspiring to pursue a career or scientific research in these fields?
Follow the things you're interested in. Don't be pressured to feel like you're behind just because you're not doing it according to some, like, you know, timeline that other people seem to have. There is no timeline. I know people who have come back and gotten science degrees in their 40s. I know people who have taken 4 years in grad school and people like me who are going to take closer to 7. Like, do whatever it is that you need in your path and don't feel ashamed about it. Like, you do not have to fit cleanly into a box or into someone's timeline. just do what you need to do for yourself. And always work with people that you like. That's another good thing. If you like the people you work with, that makes all the difference in the world. Like, it could be the most interesting project ever, but if the people you work with are awful to you, then it's not going to be a good experience. So work with good people, I think, is my other bit of advice.
And finally, do you have any experiences or last words you would like to share with us before we close?
No, this was cool. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me. I think I rambled a little bit. It's hard to squeeze a lot of complex thoughts into 30 minutes.
It was all very good advice. Thank you for being on our podcast. This is really informative. It was especially interesting how you combined teaching and research, like so many different fields, and writing as well. So for all our listeners, studying the field of astrophysics may sound daunting, but it has many compelling aspects and important applications that can be exciting to explore.
I couldn't agree more. We hope all of you enjoyed the interview and learned something about planetary science, pursuing a PhD, or the scientific research process in general.
Thank you so much for listening, and keep an eye out for the next episode of STEMZ Perspectives.
You can find out more about the journal on our website and our social media handles, which will be linked in the description. Goodbye, everyone.